people. Occasionally I bump into a guy that I don't have a clue how he passed the exam, but that's another subject entirely. I used to make jokes about Facebook and said that I was more interested in antisocial software than social software, but I was never a big fan of things like Facebook. I was of forums, per se. My experience with computers goes back to local bulletin board services that had forums where you left messages, and CompuServe was a favorite of mine. I met a lot of people all throughout the world. Especially, I was very interested in Amiga computers, and there were special interest groups on CompuServe, and I talked to guys from Saudi Arabia and Israel and Europe and all kinds of places. So that was an interesting experience as well that a lot of times has pretty much faded away. Forums, Usenet groups and such are sort of things of the past.
Well, QSL, QSL. It made me think of my old Windows 7 computer and All-Star. And I got All-Star to work with the Java script. And the audio quality was terrible. And I had to plug in a microphone, you know, to transmit from there. And I remember looking at, like, all these different channels. I cut and paste the number into the dashboard, and then I was able to hear what's going on in that particular channel, you know? And I remember it, and whenever I told people that I was using JavaScript on a Windows 7 computer, they said, well, we don't know anything about that.
Okay, well, I mean, that's, again, that's the beauty of things. You share some aspect that you're aware of, they share something that you're not aware of, and, you know, the knowledge is not a zero-sum game, to pull a line out of game theory. Knowledge increases for all of us, especially if we share it with each other, as I hope we do each Sunday night here on the Technical Mess.
Hello there. It makes me think of this thing I wrote about art. Art has no specific meaning. It has no specific meaning, although the knowledge is embedded in it through process.
Okay, a lot has been written about art, what it should do, what it shouldn't do, what it must do, what it can't do, all kinds of interesting things. Ultimately, everyone has to decide for themselves what they perceive of as art and what doesn't touch them, if you will. But, you know, again, knowledge is something that hopefully should be shared. I still remember very early into this hobby, 10 years ago, listening to some guy who kept on telling people for some strange reason that people had to deserve his knowledge, that he wouldn't share his wisdom with the average guy who just asked them questions on the radio, but somehow they had to demonstrate that they were worthy of his knowledge. I think people like that usually don't have much in the way of knowledge that's worth much, personally, but thankfully, I don't think I've heard him in 9 years, so it was a curious thing to me personally. I mean, I don't see why people do not try to, you know, help out each other. We're all on this little trip together, and if I can help you and you can help me, then both of us are helping each other. Again, it's not a zero-sum game.
KG2RY. QSL, Roy, fine business on that. They say that a person will get the knowledge they need at the time that they need it. You know, it comes to them at the right time. And maybe this person that you were talking to knew something more than what we know, and then maybe, you know, everything that he was saying is totally legitimate and valid, you know, for the circumstance. But, you know, spiritual leaders would also say that, and maybe I should not talk about this, but I'll say that, you know, you gain the knowledge at the right time.
AC2GS. Well, I hope that that is true. Unfortunately, I have met more than a few people who lacked really useful knowledge that they could have done something with. So perhaps for some people they gain the knowledge when they're ready for it. Perhaps for some they gain the knowledge before they're ready for it, and perhaps others they never gain the knowledge. But you know, I guess that's life.
Roy, start with the knowledge, work your way up to the wisdom.
Well, it's kind of an old, slightly trite, but I think true, that hopefully we will develop wisdom a little bit faster than we will develop our smart. Because with wisdom is guidance, in my humble opinion, but just knowing stuff. When you know stuff, there's always that thing that just because you know how to do something, you don't necessarily have to do it. Wisdom, I think, gives you the insight of what you should attempt to do and what you shouldn't attempt to do. So I wish we all become wiser as well as smarter.
QSL, Roy. Yes, it's a knowledge which becomes wisdom. It's useful not only for the person who has it, but for the people that, you know, come in contact with that person. They can also benefit from the knowledge and ultimately the wisdom. Maybe, you know, they gather all the knowledge that they experience, and then it becomes a wisdom, you know, sort of like a viewpoint as opposed to some kind of style where you pick it up here and there and say that it's yours, but it comes from, you know, some other person.
Well, as the old saying goes, we all stand on the shoulder of giants. A lot of people thought very hard, worked very hard, and discovered things, figured things out, and explained them to others. And I'm certainly a product of that. I've spent many a night sitting here on the other end of the radio listening to the technical net, listening to brilliant guys like Dick K2RIW and Mel K2KEY and John KC2WGB and Eric and a slew of other very smart guys who were in this hobby for decades and decades and were kind enough to share their knowledge with us all. So hopefully we can share a little wisdom as well and, you know, balance out the book, if you will.
QSL. But Roy, you know, you can't measure, you know, when somebody gives you some gift, some knowledge, you know, maybe if they don't say anything at all, and that's the big knowledge that you would get, you know, maybe, you know, it's unconventionally communicated or communicated through the tone of the voice, or somehow even the words and the way the words are said, you know, in some subtle manner, you know, and fine business, KG2RY.
Okay, wisdom is conveyed all manner of ways. I prefer the ones that are slightly more obvious. Probably I can get more out of it, but it comes in all ways. I've enjoyed this conversation. We had a little bit of a mini philosophy net again. I just want to point out to everyone else out there that this is the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. And if anyone has any questions of a technical nature, please hit the push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign, and we'll put you on the list. Oh. Okay, I think someone transmitted. The audio was lasted a fraction of a second, so check your microphone connection and try again.
This is N2, EPQ. Am I getting through?
Yes, you are.
Ah, thank you very much. I'm just using a handy talkie here. I've been listening to this net on a regular basis, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I think you are a great host, and the topics are always really nice. I have a quick question, if anybody has any ideas. On 20 meters, my brother lives in California, he's also a ham, and so we've tried to communicate during the day, like around 3 o'clock he goes on a Grumman net, but we're unable to make coast to coast. I was wondering if anybody knows of a good time of day that you might get through on 20 meters to West Coast.
Okay, very good. Anyone out there with any thoughts on this? I haven't found 20 meters these days during the sunspot minimums to be terribly good as a propagation band. I'm hoping that as we get closer and closer to the maximum, that situation changes. But if anyone has any experiences of coast-to-coast transmissions on 20 meters and can suggest a time of day that might be slightly more optimal than other times of the day, please hit that push-to-talk.
Roger, Roger. Late check-in. This is KC2QYW. Joe from Harrison, New York. Late check-in. Roger, Roger.
Yes, hello, Joe. I assume you don't have a question, you're just checking in, right?
Hey, love you guys. Enjoy it. I was enjoying the show. I was listening earlier, so I just want to put myself on a list and just checking in. And today, no questions today. Maybe next week. Back to you.
Okay, Joe. So we were trying to discuss whether anyone has any experiences with coast-to-coast transmissions on 20 meters at this point in the sunspot cycle and can recommend any particular time of day to attempt such a thing.
KG2R1.
Yes, David.
There hasn't been too much activity for the last week or so. On August 23rd at 1327 UTC, 14198 80 USB, and I were at the German station, we talked for about 15 minutes.
Okay, that's interesting. Have you had any contact with the West Coast recently?
Negative, negative. On August 21st, I worked Northern Texas with a very loud signal on 14191. I haven't been listening for California. I don't recall hearing them.
Yeah, well, getting back to EDQ, I'll ask if anyone else has any experience. Have you considered trying 40 meters? You might have a little bit better luck. The time frame is different, and obviously the net that's going on 20 isn't going to be useful, but until the sunspot cycle kind of livens up 20 meters, I don't think you're going to have much of a chance of getting coast to coast on 20 personally. But if anyone has any experience that goes against what my gut says, please hit that push to talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I go on 40 a lot, and I haven't heard California, I'm going to say years. You know, I don't have a beam pointing in that direction, but I think even if I did, I think 40 is going to be tough. You know, I mean, you'll get Utah, you'll get out there once in a while, but, I've had a hard time with 40. He's got to stick with 20 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, anytime 3 o'clock, and, you know, after all the way to, like, last station talking to Germany at 1300 UTC, that would be like now. So, you know, anyway, from 3 o'clock on to, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you just have to keep trying. You know, it all has to do with the maximum usable frequency. You know, if that's okay, you should be able to do it. Now, the 3 hours time difference too, so you're fighting over the D layer and the E layer. You know, you're always going to be about 3 hours off. But, for New York, I would say 3 o'clock till 8 o'clock at night. Just keep trying. Back to you.
Okay, very good, Paul. So I hope you got some ideas. EDQ, is your first name Manos?
It is Pete, like Peter. And it's N2 EPQ. It's funny because I couldn't get through to my brother in California, and yet I had no problem getting through to Moscow. So over the North Pole, there was a few nights. In fact, sometimes the band was open around 10 o'clock, and that was a few weeks ago. I was able to get through to Moscow. So the way the skip obviously goes is, it'll skip over some parts and other parts will pick you up pretty good. So anyway, that was the extent of my question, and I'd like to turn it over to any other questions. This is N2EPQ.
Okay, very good, Peter. Thanks for participating, and please come back again. And if things change and you're able to get to the West Coast, come back and tell us how you manage that. Yes, propagation is one of those incredible variables. People ponder it, people write about it, people think about it. There's all kinds of not terribly logical ways of getting a signal from point A to point B, and skip usually annoys the heck out of most people. They don't quite understand why they should be able to contact a distant station, but one that's relatively nearby can't hear them to save their lives. So propagation remains very much a mystery. But thank you, Peter, for your contribution to this technical mess tonight, and thank you for your kind words.
And I, as I say, I totally enjoy this. Everyone is polite, and everyone that I've heard speaking always seems to have something good to say, which I really enjoy. It's good to hear intelligent conversations. Back to you.
Yes, I agree entirely. I am very thankful for the people who participate in this technical net. There's some clever guys. They have they come from different places and different expertises and different experiences, but they add to the whole. So I agree, and they're a great bunch of guys, and I wish we could get a few gals in as well. Occasionally we do have a female participant, but unfortunately they're few and far between, but a man can hope. Once again, this is AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net, and if anyone has any questions of a technical nature, or I'll open up in general, if anyone wants to discuss any fundamentally technological or scientific concept, and we'll see what we can do about it, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2GXM, Rich.
Yes, Rich.
Good evening, Roy. Nice to talk to you again. I have a question about Delta loop antennas. I understand that if you want to make a Delta loop multiband, you can use a 4-to-1 Balun at the feed point. And I expect to make the Delta loop a vertical polarization, so as I understand, the feed point is going to be 1/4 of the way up one of the sides as a triangle. So, my question is, do I need to put the Balun on the antenna, or can I connect the Balun to the antenna with twin lead?
Well, personally, I would suggest that you place the Balun as close to the antenna feed point as possible, because the point between the antenna feed point and the transmission line and the Balun is going to have some degree of loss. If you're going to keep it open line, it's going to be more academic than anything else, because the attenuation of open line is minuscule. So in practical terms, as long as we're not talking coaxial cables, it's not an important factor. It's more of a ease of design and maintenance on your part.
Exactly. I'm trying to keep the stress on the antenna low. So I'd like to not hang the coaxial cable too close to it to avoid that stress. Open wire line is much lighter and won't cause that weight problem.
Yeah, as I mentioned, as long as we're talking open line, I would say that it's immaterial where you put the Balun. Put it where it's most stable. You don't have to worry about the fraction of a dB of attenuation loss. It's going to be minuscule.
Okay, thank you, Roy. That was the question. Carry on. WB2GXM.
Okay, very good. Just as an aside to you guys out there, open line is a wonderful form of transmission line. It was the transmission line of all amateur radio operators before World War II. Although coaxial cables were invented decades earlier, they were cost prohibitive and they weren't really in a price point and availability that amateur radio operators could play too much with. So open line was used until after World War II, when Army surplus of coaxial cables made them relatively dirt cheap. Although they have their own problems, which is that there is an attenuation loss not seen in open line, they are RF isolated from their environment. And so, whereas open line, you have to be cautious of whether it's coming into contact with any kind of conducting material nearby in the near field. That is not the problem with coax. Coax, you could throw any place. They're, again, RF isolated because of the nature of coaxial cable. So, if any of you guys have an opportunity to play around a little bit with open line, that might be something you want to experiment with. In the old days, the people would have a non-resonant dipole. They would run open line out from the feed point and do all the antenna tuning in their shack. And again, because of the low attenuation rate of open line, they had very little loss. They were able to tune their non-resonant antennas to the frequency that they wanted, and it was a viable option back in the old days. Occasionally, some people to this day have doublets of non-resonant dipoles, but they're few and far between, so consider open line if you're in an experimental mode. Open line comes in all kinds of different variations. You could run your own with little plastic spreaders that maintain a proper distance, or you can get them in ladder line or window pane or a whole matter of things. But most of us old timers certainly remember the 300 ohm twin lights that fed our antennas when we were kids. So that's my little 2 cents on open line. If anyone else has any comments about this, please hit that push-to-talk button.
JXM again. Why would doublets be scarce nowadays?
I built an antenna with a delta loop. It's working great.
Oh, that's good. I'd like to hear more about that. I'm just saying that most people don't know that much or care that much for open line, so they tend to use coaxial cables. And once you introduce coaxial cables, you have to then get a little bit fancy with the doublet and put the antenna tuner at the antenna feed point. Otherwise, the amount of attenuation loss makes a non-resonant doublet not as attractive as it once was.
Yes, I would like to hear about the delta loop also.
Yes, indeed. Please, ID yourself and tell us about your delta loop.
10-2 EPQ again, and I have a delta loop that I put up. It's a basically a 40-meter delta loop. I'm just using twin lead, like TV antenna twin lead. And I ran about maybe 15 feet of twin lead down from the corner of the delta loop because I wanted to make it vertically polarized. So I put it, I have the two corners near, you know, toward the ground. About the corner of the delta loop is maybe 8 feet above the ground, and then the tip of the delta loop is on the top of a tree. I shot it over with a slingshot. Then I ran the 300 ohm twin lead about 8 or 10 feet down to the ground where I have a ballon. And then from there, I ran RG8U to the shack. I have a ground rod at the ballon and another ground rod at the house. And then it ran into the shack. It's tuned up very nicely. I use it on 40, I use it on 20. I haven't used it on a lot of other bands, but I got the idea off the internet. And I have the feeling that the person there that's talking about doing a delta loop, you may have seen the same article. So it worked out very well for me. That's what I did.
You start out very useful information.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Peter. As I mentioned before, we all have stuff that we can share and make us all smarter than when we walked into the shack Sunday night. So thanks, both of you. Anyone else with any comments on this particular subject before we move on?
WB2EHK again.
Yes, Jeff.
And in reference to the subject before, about what time to operate on 20, I think it's could be useful to go to QRZ.com. On their main page, they have a propagation possibility display, and you look at it every day, and it tells you what bands are good in the day or the night, and that could be a guide as to when you might want to try to make the contact to California. For instance, today's chart says during the day 40 and 80 are poor, and at the night it's fair. Next line, 30 and 20 during the day is good and the night is good. And then it was 17 and 15, the day was fair and the night was fair. And then it said 12 and 10, the day was poor, and the night was poor. So the best bands to try would be 20 meters. So that could be somewhat of a guide. And back in the old days when Marconi tried to make a transmission from England to the continent on the I think Newfoundland or something, he had it prearranged to listen for a signal. Now we got emails. So that fellow that wanted to make a contact with his brother, maybe they could communicate by email and say, let's go to a certain frequency and let's see if you hear me. It's a lot easier with emails than what Marconi had to go through. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chet. Yeah, I see it on QRZ's page. It's basically a little web gadget. I've seen it on a lot of other people's pages. There's a site that offers it, and you just have to put a little JavaScript tag in your web page, and you too can have that little window with the status. You know, there's beacons, there's reverse beacons, there's Whisper, there's a whole bunch of technology sort of designed around trying to figure out what the real-time propagation is for different bands and different locations. So those are also useful. The trouble is, though, that usually, you know, 20 meters this time of the sunspot cycle, I don't know how often you're going to get any kind of pathway that's going to work from the East Coast to the West Coast. But all these are good ideas of how to just generally get a sense of propagation conditions in real time. Once again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Net. So if anyone has any technical questions, preferably amateur radio related, but they don't have to be. They can be anything science related or even general medical questions. We're open to all kinds of questions, and we'll try as best we can to assist. Just to hit that push to talk button, give me your first name and your call sign. Yes, Wesley.
UAH again, Rocco. First off, can you hear me? Because I'm on an HT right now.
Yes, Wesley and Rocco heard. Rocco, what did you want to say?
First thing I wanted to say was the radio dealership in England we were talking before. It was Nevada Radio. That was the name of it, just for information. The other question I have is...
CMD. K2CYR, right in the Bronx, no traffic.
The Delta variant of new infections, but a week or two ago, my mother, son, and ex-wife, two of them were hospitalized with COVID, but they didn't identify them as any specific variant, so I'm not sure where the media is getting this 90% of new infections are Delta variant. My ex-wife was previously infected with COVID a year ago and doubly back this year. So maybe you could just clear that up for me because the hospital did not test or let me know that we're Delta variant.
Yeah, it's my understanding that they do not test every hospital admission. They do random tests of people who test positive. Those get sent down and typed. And it's a statistical analysis based upon a subsample of people who are infectious. So we're still not at the point where we're able to test the genotype of every single person who has a virus attack. So that's probably leading to some confusion.
Okay, thank you very much. And by the way, I'm about 15 miles from Glen Oaks on the repeater on an Anytone 878. So it's a good little radio. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and thanks to everyone in the net, K2UAH Mobile VaccineNet.
You're welcome, Rocco. Yeah, I have an 878. I really like it. Use it a lot for my hotspot, but I mean, I really am a strong believer in getting one of those BNC to SMA converters and then having antennas that use the BNC. They're much easier to change. They put a lot less stress on at the SMA connector. And I use it for hotspots, but I have longer antennas. And it's analog, it's BMR, it's 2 meters, it's 70 centimeters. It's not like I'm getting a dime for advertising it, but, you know, it works for me and apparently works for Rocco, so good for you, Rocco. Wesley, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, this is information. I was interested with very low frequency and I mentioned that before, but I didn't talk about it too much. There are voltmeters. They are not voltmeters, but they are voltmeters. So they are selective level voltmeters. And they look like a small receiver. And there are two major companies. One is Wandel and Goldman. And you can check on eBay. PSM-139 goes from 50 hertz to 32 megahertz. And the other one is Hewitt Packard 3586B selective level meter. So it behaves like a high frequency voltmeter, but actually has everything in an extremely well done receiver. And you can measure the power. You can have a frequency reference adjustment. It goes to six zeros before the, so it's 1, 2, 3, no, it's 4 zeros. So let's say you have 3.5 megahertz and then you have the 4 zeros after that. So it's a extremely, extremely accurate one. Let me jump. And you can have a limited bandwidth, extremely good for Morse code communication for CW. And it can do intermodulation distortion. It could go measure return loss. So I believe that was something that was pre-vector network, vector signal analyzer that could do all of that things. So information light. I have three of them. So I have one Wandel and Goldman PSM-139, and I have two of 3586B. I've got a second one very cheap, so I said, okay, at least I make one good working one so far. I made only one, and I'm trying to fix the other one. It's a really nice, beautiful piece of technology. It is made inside like a tank. Everything is in the boxes, fully screen from RFI, amazing stuff. So for people who want to have extra receiver, or they want to do some measurement, I'm trying to find out what the features are. I have a plenty of manuals there, operating manual. Maybe this one will give me some of this. So it's a signal. And it does have the upper sideband, lower sideband. Measuring impulse noise, so if you adjusting your antennas, you can actually very accurately see the noise level and measure the noise level, measure the harmonics and audio distortion, and it does have also passive and active network analysis, and that's all from the receiver. Unbelievable. Oh, okay, there is a spurious emissions from the transmitter because the Wandel and Goldman has a tracking generator built in and the receiver. So one thing interesting is that if you have a vector network analyzer, you cannot put any signal. You can operate on any voltages on it. It's just you're not transmitting, you're not doing anything, you just do your measurement. Here it's like more of live action. Enter Xia.
Well, yeah, they're also referred to as, I think, wave analyzers by certain manufacturers. And they act as a receiver. As far as I'm aware, they don't act as a transmitter. So they're very capable of operating as a radio receiver. Their original cost was somewhat prohibitive. You mentioned 3586B, I think. The only thing I found a price for was a 3586. It listed back in the good old days in the, I think, 80s for $17,000. This is a little bit above and beyond most hams' budget, but I could understand why over the years they've been sold, probably in many cases for scrap and have become a bargain. So I'm glad you picked one up, or if you picked a bunch of them up. I have absolutely no experience with wave analyzers myself. I generally am fascinated by software-defined radios, which are a different ball of wind. But it sounds interesting.
An interesting story about them is they were made mostly for telephone systems. So the company Wendell and Goldterman, as well as the other one, which is the Hewlett-Packard 3586B. Both of them don't have the BNC connector, but they have a special telephone, like a special connection, and I have just an adapter from that to the BNC. I happen to have to get it from John, KC2WGB, and I never used them. He said, you're gonna need that. Okay, and I'm trying to find that there are plenty of measurements that could be done. Plenty of measurements. There was plenty of acquiring of those companies to the other companies. Acterna was the last one that was doing it, and it was operational in the cell phone business till 2007, I believe, 2008, and then slowly the fiber optic was trying to taking over. And I was comparing both of them on 80 meters, which one is more sensitive. Both of them are great. So we're talking about $70,000 piece of equipment that you can get for a few hundred dollars if you're lucky. You can get the damaged one. I've got both of my HP 3586B, which is the one that is recommended, not A, but B. I've got them for very cheap price. I made so far one great, absolutely amazing one. And think, since you can measure 50 hertz, you can actually hear the hum from 50 hertz if you want to. But it goes down to 40 hertz, the max. It doesn't go lower than that. Let me drop. It is a need for, okay, if I've got something here. So it does have a tracking generator, but in Hewlett-Packard, tracking generator comes as another piece of equipment. Not expensive. You can buy those tracking generators for $150, $200. The selective level meter, which is that receiver, but actually it's a voltmeter, very, very sophisticated voltmeter. This one can go as much as $1,500, but you can get one with slight damage for $300, $200, and it's worth your effort. Usually there is a small board with the power supply, and it does have a backup battery for memory. And this battery with years leaks out. And there are only three small chips, looks like a transistor, but they have eight legs. And usually that you have to change, and it's gonna run like a new one. And this thing is impossible to be killed. Just impossible to be killed. Operates like a regular transceiver. It does have a dial, or you can punch the frequency you want to. I was listening to the radio stations HF, and I was trying to spot if I can hear. Remember back on like half a year ago, we had a discussion. Can you hear the commercial radio station on 50, 60 kilohertz? Yes, you do. I believe NY2H at that time was checking if you can hear. But right now I have those two receivers and I cannot hear those stations any longer. So it was like a harmonic from the nearby station that I don't know what is the lowest on long wave frequency for commercial use.
I don't know. I'll throw it out to the audience and also add that Siemens made a few of these wave analyzers. They apparently made a model called the D364 and the D2007 and the D2008. So there is probably some old Siemens knocking around. Anyone out there with any thoughts on what's the lowest commercial frequency broadcast in this country?
VDH with a comment. KD2FIU with a comment.
Yes, John first and then George.
Yeah, well, I usually can hear WWVB late at night on 60 kilohertz, but there are some military RTTY teletype stations that go out around 17 or 18 kilohertz. But the only commercial one I know of is in this country, WWBB for the clock, for the so-called atomic clock.
Okay, very good, John. Let me see if I have it. Yeah, hopefully I have it. Thank you. Yeah, we all avail ourselves, but most of us do, of WWBB, and that's what my little atomic clocks work. George, you wanted to say something?
Thank you, Roy, but not to the answer, not to answer what you were questioning, but 1560, I don't know if they still have one of their towers present in Maspeth in Queens. That was overwhelming for me for a while on 1.56 megahertz. I know Wesley had just mentioned that. Interesting to note about 16 kilohertz. Sorry, not to answer your question, but to mention about 1560 being in Western Queens with one of their towers. KD2FIU, thank you, Roy.
AC2PL coming.
Yes, Jeff.
How you doing, Roy? Sorry, this is not about receiving shortwave, but it's rather about the selective level meter, so if you want to skip me until later, that's fine.
Well, I mean, it's all part of the same topic, I think, so if you have something to add, please.
All right, thanks, Roy. AC2PL. The question, well, actually the statement more was about the selective level meters that Wesley was referring to. I've been after an HP 3586C for a long time. I haven't found one yet that's affordable or working, so I haven't jumped at the ones that are on eBay. But I seem to recall having read somewhere that you can use this as use the device as a fairly accurate 10 megahertz frequency calibration because it automatically will receive WWV and lock to it. Is that correct, Wesley? Do you know?
That is correct.
Roger, thank you. That's a feature I've been dying to try out, so I will chase one of those down eventually. And but the tracking generators, the really nice tracking generators are going to run you more than $100, I do believe. And the ones that are interfaced with your station monitors, for example, or the service monitors are not going to be the highest quality, but really getting the resolution bandwidth way down to get very accurate measurements is wants a little bit more money.
Yep, 2-2-R-1.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, for that. And David, you wanted to say something?
Well, first, Roy, I want to thank you for this excellent TechNet, and I appreciate everything that you do, you know, to make it happen. You know, when you guys are talking about this, it made me think of something in high school. I was in high school. And some guy turned his TV set into an oscilloscope and then connected it left and right, you know, for a sine wave and created like all these kind of squiggly lines in the middle to the music, you know. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that before.
I'll let you know if I have it. Two things. Jeff, if you're hunting for one, I've got a really cheap one. That the second one, I'm working on it right now. The one I made is working great. And it's easy job because I can compare between the two. That's exactly the same one, the B version, 3586B, and I have all of the schematics, all of the manuals and whatsoever. So contact me and we can talk. Now, as far as audio, one that I have purchased was used by a company that was doing a very high-end audio amplifiers. And they were using device for numbers of measurements. But what this thing can do, it can automatically determine station frequency. It has 75 ohms, 50 ohms, the 124 ohms, 135 ohms. It has bridge mode and 600 ohms. The difference between the Wendel and Gottelman is Gottelman has 50 ohm and 75 ohms switchable and number of other impedances, but that's not a big deal. There is a schematic how to convert that to 50 ohm, and I have all of that information needed. It could be used also for checking your instrument frequency calibration if you're working on some stuff. It works with a single sideband, CW and AM. It does power measurement, input termination impedance, performing power measurement, okay. Transforming power from dBs to watts. It can measure in I can switch this the Wendel, but the other one is exactly the same. But it's okay. Millivolts, microvolts, dBs, dBm, dB, microvolt, PWO, dB0, dBm0, dBm microvolt 0. So those are the modes that this one has. And it has something like a level APS that I don't know what it is. So, and the good thing is comparing to vector network analyzer is this one can be used in live scenario. In vector network analyzer you have to have everything completely disconnected and then you do your measurement. Okay, so you have a live measurement there. Then you have a measuring carrier signal strength. And you can have an offset. So let's say you hear, this is the best S-meter ever. I mean, talking about $70,000 a year that is right now within the reach of ham radio amateurs. So, you will want to measure signal strength in dB over under or normal S9 level of a receiver strength meter level calibrated for, let's say, 100 microvolt signal equal to S9 reading, we can do it. And what else? I'm trying to see setting a AM transmitter carrier to the SSB frequency. It could be used as a generator for some guys who use the who like AM on HF. It has the filters, so with the filters, starting with 3100 hertz, then we have, and it was this WTD white, I'm not sure what is the difference, then you have a 400 hertz, and then you have a 20 hertz. So for those who want to really help themselves in CW, if you go to 20 hertz, you're not going to miss it. You're not going to hear anything left and right. You're right on the target, and you get the fix. Okay.
Limark TechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
When frequency shift during auto calls, when transmitting AM or SSB station using HB3586 with the instrument auto call function is on, the instrument auto frequency will change about 100 hertz up down in the frequency during the 3 second auto call signal. It simply adjusts itself. If you have a choice, you want to measure the carrier. So within the single side band, you're supposed to have a 3% of the carrier. You can measure if you really have a 3% of the carrier. But if you want to know, compare the left side band to the right side band and see how much of attenuation you have, because you are supposed to be on 3.5 megahertz on the lower side sideband, right? You can do it too. The measuring strength of the station that you're listening to, your wideband amplifier noise measurement. Then you have ability to connect it to the old-fashioned computer and its software, but I don't have it. And I believe that's it. They have so many different measuring harmonic levels. So with the amplifier still putting 2.5 watts in, let's say, 1 kilohertz into 75 ohm dummy load resistor, but you can do it with 50 ohm. You can enter the frequency, let's say, 2 kilohertz, using the keyboard and change the measuring frequency to 2 kilohertz. You should see the lower, see a lower than 0 dB reading on the display. So there are plenty of filters. You can measure the filters. You can actually perfectly see how wide is the filter. This thing is really, really great. Passive and active network analysis, normalizing levels, filter passband and loss, measuring amplifier gain and frequency response, alignment analysis, radio circuits, so many things, transmitter measurement, procedure, if you want to use it for it. So all of the things, and apart from that, you have a great receiver, absolutely amazing, great receiver, a secondary receiver for those who are on HF, and to XJ and Jeff.
Okay, thank you very much, Wes, for that summary. It sounds like a very interesting piece of equipment. Jeff, I hope that you're able to get one of them and can tell us how you like it.
I'm sorry, I forgot a few things. Low distortion selective, low noise selective, carrier, noise demodulation, wideband impulse noise, enhanced frequency accuracy. I believe that's it. And then if you connect the signal generated into it, then you have another 20 options. Jeff, maybe you can say a few words.
ACTPL. I've never tried the select level meter. That's why I've been so keen to get one. I have three or four service monitors of various vintage and quality, and I've got plenty of GPS locked oscillators to play with to keep things on frequency. But I really wanted to try out the particularly the HP version to try some of the features that you just mentioned. And as a result, I've just emailed you. If your email on QRZ is good. Anyway, I've taken two.